Joining us in studio, longtime friend of the program, State Senator from the 8th District, Senator Matt Behnke. Good afternoon to you, sir. Thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for having me.
So there's a number of things we're going to discuss today. Of course,
the project. Usually happens when I come with you guys.
You never know. Should we just warn Tracy now? Or
yeah,
okay.
I think so. Yeah.
All right. But one of the things certainly that we're going to discuss at length is cybersecurity. The more interconnected we become, the more reliant we become on things that are not within our hands, the bigger risk we expose ourselves to having another player or another entity be able to compromise that. We have created all of these different networks and all of these different levels and all of these different things, you know, be it internet, be it networks, everything else, in the belief that it's going to create a safer environment. But in reality, how much of that environment are we consistently opening up to bad actors?
A lot more. And you said it, when we're interconnected, it's kind of putting all your eggs in one basket, and we're centralized in a place where it's easier to get to, where in the past you'd have to go dumpster diving. Hackers would go into different areas to track people down, and even taught in the military reconnaissance of individuals, where you go in the social environment, where you go to lunch, those kind of daily activities. Now we just track one or two things. We can get into a back door, may not be the main effort, or we go into a supplemental thing, get into that database, and like we see with this MOVEit virus going through, they exploit it, then they can capture it. And frankly, they don't know how long they've been in there. So they've pretty much taken down everybody who is a licensed owner in the state of Oregon, has then pretty much compromised their data right now.
I'm glad you brought up the
Louisiana
old days
too. So
yeah.
There's a couple other states that are getting hit too.
There's a number that are getting hit, and right. And there's different. They pick and choose who they're going to hit, when and where.
Exactly.
It's beyond you just simply, you know, at home, you click on an ad that you think is for something, and all of a sudden you've got a virus. We're talking widespread things that are corrupting entire networks at this point. Yep. But I'm glad you brought up the old days where someone would have to go through your trash, or, you know, back before they would block out your credit card number on a receipt and somebody would jot it down, or, you know, you had to work to steal somebody's identity.
Right.
Is there a tracker, or is there something that tells us the percentage of increase of identity theft from pre, we've got everything hooked up to every aspect of cyberspace, to when I had to dumpster dive? I imagine it's got to be in the triple digits.
It is. And there's several locations, nonprofits, that are kind of tracking this data. And a lot of that is the data privacy elements that you're referring to. We were on with Lars this afternoon, and one of the big things is about data minimizations when we had Social Security numbers that were the entire number we had to hand out. And I remember you had it on your checks, mm-hmm, printed off with your address and your full name, and you gave them pretty much four out of the five things that anybody would want to get. If I just grabbed that one check, I got majority of your data. Now we've wiped that clean. We don't have checks, but you move it on to these devices. Those are connected to all these different things. And, oh, by the way, the government agencies are collecting that, and they're selling it, and they're using it. And are we protecting it? Obviously not as good as we need to.
Government agencies are collecting and selling our data.
Yes.
Isn't the only form of revenue that they're supposed to collect is taxes?
That's exactly right. However, that's what, so 2 years ago during COVID, I ran a bill about highlighting what the Department of Licensing in the state of Washington is doing with some data and how they're sharing it with insurance companies and other things to go to this scoring, to how much are you a risk driving down the road and what you're going to do. And if you go after different parts of this, there's a lot of companies that are buying that data, and we're selling it and making money, and some things to offset state agencies. The funding that we're getting is coming from some of those lines of, you know, profit that we're seeing out there.
That's unethical.
Wow.
That's incredibly unethical.
A lot of people don't know. That's incredibly unethical. And that's kind of the norm going on.
Now,
and of course,
that,
nobody signed on to that bill, and it just died on the vine. But we had a good talking. Representative Walsh and I, it was his committee when I submitted it when I was still in the House, and we had a really good opportunity to highlight a lot of these concerns and risks that are out there.
Now, is this just Washington State, or is this a nationwide thing?
It's a nationwide thing. It's kind of the standard they've seen insurance companies going after different pieces of when you do your background checks, things like that. They leverage that into a risk assessment model. And then from that, then they collaborate how much you're going to be worth and the different thing. Kind of like the ESG is looking at now that people are going to. This is similar to that model we've been used for years since these insurance companies have been out there.
Now, I understand certain elements being available through public record.
Yeah. Yeah.
But actually selling the information is a completely different animal.
I agree, 100%. That's why I threw the bill out there and said, wait a second. People need to understand this is happening. And it didn't really, it came out with a whimper, and everybody kind of said, okay. It's kind of like kids these days. So what? I'm online now. They got a lot of my info. Why do I care about the Chinese? Now, with the big news, officially, TikTok agreed that they're collecting data and it's storing in China.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they lied to Congress. They lied all the stuff they did a couple weeks ago. And all along, we're standing by going, it's not a big deal. We're just going to do dances and things on these social media sites.
Yeah.
It's not going to impact us at all. They're collecting a lot of data about where everything's going on. And just accessing the videos, how much data that you can do. I think Kim Komando's show and a couple others have done a deep dive into just the initial thing. When you just click on a video, how much that it's sending data about your device, what operating system, your location, all this stuff back to China.
Mm. We're talking with State Senator Matt Behnke from the 8th District here on the Bottom Line News Radio 610 KONA. Fabulous.
I didn't mean to come with bright and cheery stuff. Is that what
you Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, hey.
We're going to get to the bright and cheery stuff later on.
Hey, when you're here, we always talk unicorns and rainbows.
That's
so,
right.
I mean,
that's true.
You know, it's and the lollipops later on. So we throw those in as well. But
right.
For
I those actually threw you a curveball this time.
You
it's
did.
The first time you're
for,
speechless.
For those of us of a certain age, we remember how closely we protected these things from the, quote, bad guy. Now we look at it, and the bad guy and the big guy are doing business together, and nobody is standing in the way. Now, and we'll touch on this a little bit later on about what was revealed at this fundraising dinner last night that got China all worked up into a tizzy. But at what point in time do we get back to, and this, please don't take this as you know, directed towards you, but at what point in time do we get back to where our elected officials are concerned about protecting the people that they represent instead of interests that may not be in the people's best interest?
I think we're getting really close to that tipping point, because some of this data that's used for economic development, things like that, we understand. And even the growth management plan and looking at property and flying drones over private property now is actually becoming a norm, so we can lessen the, you know, the full-time employees that we need in cities and counties and things to do more with less kind of areas. And even the autonomous vehicles, we could do algorithms, AI. I know you want to talk about that because that's a minor issue going on, and it's not going to take over the world. But we are leveraging these things, but how far do you go, and how much do we say, all right, stop, this is too far, and where that line is. We're getting to that point now that we're going to, personally, I've been asked to run a data privacy bill for the state of Washington again and bring this up because of what we're seeing in AI, because of what we're seeing at the federal level as well.
Mm. So we'll dive into the AI in a minute. Let's take a quick time out. We're talking cybersecurity with State Senator Matt Behnke from the 8th District here on the Bottom Line. A number of other things we're going to touch on as well, including the reveal from Boeing that they're working on a new airframe design, which is kind of intriguing if you take a look at the pictures. Back with more after this. Welcome back, Bottom Line News Radio 610 KONA. It is Tuesday afternoon. Rob Francis, John McKay, joined in studio by State Senator Matt Behnke, representing the 8th legislative district. There are a lot of things, certainly, that people hear time and again about what they should do, what they can do. Companies, long list of things, can do and should do. And in all reality, you lump government agencies in with businesses because they're using similar infrastructure. Right. But in truth, is there really anything you can do?
Yes, there's a lot. And every chance you try to share, like those kind of things, be aware of what you're actively doing. Too many times, you know, the password thing always comes up and how we're dealing with these things. The less is more kind of the attitude. And if you can keep a lot of that offline, you don't have to give up just even your email, all these different things that you're trying to do. I tell people, get a junk email. If you want to sign up for certain things, do that.
Yeah.
But constantly go through there and make sure you're staying vigilant. That's what sometimes we do. The automation and leading kind of in the AI discussion is that we let the computers do more, and then it allows us to lull us to sleep that everything's going fine and we trust somebody else to do this. And a lot of times that's Chinese or another foreign national company that's taking care of our data that's going on here. And we're being tracked and those things. Not to forget about Alexa and those things in the home.
Yeah, I don't have one of those either.
I just installed the app, uninstalled that app off my phone.
Which one?
Alexa.
Alexa?
I don't have
it. Well, I did it yesterday because we don't use it and it takes up space.
Yeah, I don't have it.
Smart man.
The more apps you clear off your phone, the faster your phone operates.
Yeah, I can just see it now. China's sitting back there and they're eating popcorn listening to you.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right. I'm a boring guy compared to this guy.
But when we talk about this, when we look at really what is happening, it always seems that they are one step or two steps ahead.
Yep.
That we are constantly playing catch up in this environment and in this regard. So especially when we're talking about government agencies and we're talking about businesses that store a ton of data, are there certain ways, like keeping things on a, like for example, for, you know, at home I have a hard drive that can separate.
Yep.
You know, that I can keep information on and so on and so forth. You know, are there ways that you can, because businesses aren't open 24 hours a day.
Right.
Is there a way that you turn around and you can protect this information by taking it down?
Yes, and you should. Less is more kind of attitude. If you have more than 3 or 6 months of data on there, you should pull it offline. Lars brought this up as well. It's kind of putting it into archive, and the archive should be separate from that whole system. In the military, we're taught to go ahead and take it offline. So you bring it into a standalone, and even if you have a different hard drive, you swap hard drives every 2 or 3 months, depending on the level of security you're working with.
So is the same procedure used in the military also used with the National Guard?
Yes.
Okay, so the same procedure used in the military, the same procedure used with the National Guard, those are state agencies, right?
Yeah, state agencies need to follow, in most cases, okay. The best business practices are through the federal agencies that come down. So we're talking about NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, that is out there. And then we follow the whole CISR effort as well, Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency.
So what about the cloud?
Yes.
Well, then, so how are these agencies getting hit if they're supposed to be following these practices that are...
And that's the issue. So following practices, being accountable, making it a priority is always number one. And most of the time, the agencies are just kind of putting Band-Aids where it's at. And Lars brought this up in our discussion as well, as we hire some good people. But a lot of times, when they see the light of a better paying job or a better opportunity or going with the big tech companies, they jump. And so we don't have those type of people that have the experience of things. We get them right out of college, kind of get their feet wet, get their resume going kind of thing. And then they use that to go on to one of the bigger, better jobs. We can't keep them at our agencies. So we have a big turnover. We're trying to maintain that and leverage that to see if we can catch up. Like you said, we're usually behind the power curve on the cloud, or offset some of this to private agencies and hold them accountable.
Well, maybe some of those people that got fired for not getting the shot could get their job back.
Hey.
There's a novel idea. But I was going to say, you know, you hear so much about the cloud. Well,
yes.
You know, and people say, yes, no, yes. In your opinion, or based on what you know, what are your thoughts on the offsite cloud storage?
A lot of that, it's all, it really comes out, I know this is a political answer, it depends on the situation and what you're dealing with. So if it's data sharing over certain things, how much data are you sharing and where are you doing it? And going to the move it area, a lot of that data should not have been transferred during certain times. So it's looking at procedural things, business practices. Do you really need the data 24/7? No. I even teach with some of the students, do you turn off your router at home at night? And people look at me and go, what? We just keep it on 24/7. So when you go to bed, I mean, 9 o'clock, 9:30 for me, you know, staying up way late at 9:30.
Yeah, and
maybe 10 o'clock.
That's party.
Friday, Saturday night, stay up till 10. I guess my wife's going to kill me for sharing that. But so router comes off, you know, and should turn off, like your lights, things like that. And if you don't, physically unplug it. And a lot of the agencies don't. You leave it up and running. So when do the hackers want to hit you? They're still up and running. Nobody's awake. Nobody's monitoring these setup. So it's easy to go after it. In the military, we were taught that was when they're coming. So you have that threat envelope. You put up your big guards right when a time when the West Coast or where your time zone is goes to bed is when the attack's going to happen.
Because pretty much the only thing I've ever used it for is, you know, photos.
Photos back up certain things, and that's good stuff. Now, when you're talking your checking account or you're doing stocks, that's the part of where it depends.
Never.
So I would assess that and say, nope, keep it local. Don't share that on any device, and don't do the synchronized backups and these things that say, we'll do this for you, and we'll update it once a week and make sure it gets a backup over here in case you lose it. We had a time where hard drives were failing right and left. And that was kind of when in the 90s, early 2000s, and you'd have to swap them out pretty easy because you're burning through those things. Now, with the solid-state technologies, you haven't heard of a blue screen of death in years. And a lot of times, you probably don't even turn these off in here. You just keep it going kind of like at home. But we tell people, get back in the old school days of turning those things off. You're not using it. Close the camera. Camera's on. One of the first things we do in cyber competitions, even at the school, is you go into the camera and the microphone. So now I can hear you, I can see you, I can record that, and you don't even know it's on. Most of them don't even have a light that's indicating the camera's on or that microphone. So you give these to kids during COVID at a time when they're not acceptable to a lot of these other things, but then a hacker can get into bedrooms where kids are in this thing, and K through 12 and even preschoolers are at
like
these laptops.
Like with Chromebooks.
Chromebooks and all those were not locked down. So those were easy things to make sure. Now we're kind of... because everybody wanted to get them out there. So we're into this rush of solving a problem. We forget about security. So a lot of times my passion is don't forget about security. Push that up front. Make sure that's a priority when you're implementing these.
Wow. Well, it's a good thing when we do Zoom meetings, I don't have a microphone or a camera on my computer. I don't. No. I just show up. I just show
you
up
don't
as
need
the
it.
I
yes.
show up as the white circle head
and
with my
fine.
Name.
Yes, and that's fine.
And if I want to interact, I can type in a comment.
Yep, and you got the chat box, you got things going on. And I tell people, we're working more savvy that way and technology adaptable, I guess, and more, you know, mature in our technology skills. But, yeah, be careful what you're sharing and how that's set up as well.
We're talking with State Senator Matt Behnke from the 8th Legislative District here on The Bottom Line. Still a number of things we want to touch on, but I want to get back to Behnke binge watching weekend that keeps you up till 10
o'clock.
That's
very
at
night. Exciting. Yeah.
I mean, it's which streaming service? I mean, which series are you into now that you're pushing that one extra one to?
Well, we're waiting on Yellowstone because that's been the key. So that's like everybody, it's like can't wait for the next coming out here. But we've been hitting the whole 1883 and the backstories. So.
Oh yeah!
Wow!
Yeah, good stuff.
It is.
Started watching Black Sails on Stars.
I heard that's good.
It is. It's okay. Really good. We'll take a quick time out. We're gonna come back. We're gonna talk Boeing, and we're also gonna talk. We're gonna talk gas, because if you haven't noticed, we're number one.
Yay! Not.
Yeah, we're number one in the country now for the highest gas prices.
I couldn't believe it when we beat Hawaii.
Yeah,
and then California.
Number one.
It's terrible.
Average gas price in Washington State is just under $5 a gallon. That's the average gas price. Poor San Juan Islands are probably over $6 at this point.
They're at like $5.30.
No, San Juan's got to be higher than that. They were at 580 before.
Really?
Yeah, San Juan Islands San Juan Islands were up there. We'll double check and look at it. They were leading the pack before. Back at the Bottom Line, News Radio 610 KONA. It is Thursday afternoon. Rob Francis, John McKay, joined by State Senator from the 8th District. Matt Behnke, longtime friend of the program. Good to have you in, sir. Always appreciate your time.
Thank you, sir. Great to be here.
Let's talk a little bit about AI. John and I have had this conversation a couple times. And John thinks it's a little more like Terminator. I think it's a little more like 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Yeah.
You know, that just one day AI is going to turn around and say, Senator Behnke, I can't do that. Goodbye.
Well, the people that Stanley Kubrick, the guy that pioneered,
was brilliant. Yeah.
And even James Cameron, to look that far ahead, with the computers becoming self-aware, Skynet, a perceived threat. Well, I followed some of these cyber folks that have had big interactions. And they ask the AI, who would you save, me or you? I'd save myself. I mean, the answers are just, you think you're talking to Hannibal Lecter.
Right. Does not have a soul. They don't care.
Yeah.
It's a binary decision. And going through calculations, these algorithms that were built into that, and the more they learn, it's their sacrifice. It's like, okay, we need to take care of you. So, yeah, that's the big thing between the two.
And that's the scariest part of all this, is the people that have created this, the people that have continued to
push the envelope,
advance the research and the technology with AI, understand they do not make decisions based on any type of non-empirical data.
Right.
It is all simply based on statistic because there is no emotion. There's no ability for emotion. You even go back to the movie Blade Runner.
Oh, yeah. Harrison Ford and Rutger Hauer.
Yeah, where you had
the replicants.
Yes, you had, you know, these futuristic elements. Isaac Asimov made a career writing books on things like
Robot.
This. Exactly. So when we're talking about beings and entities that aren't sentient, but we create a false sense of that, decisions they make are not going to be prioritizing anything other what the data tells them. And by making these smarter and smarter, well, they could just cut your oxygen off in a room.
That's right.
We got to pay the power bill, and we'll just, you know, ICU takes up a lot of, it costs a lot of money. We're just going to turn this room off to save some money this week.
So we had a bill this last session similar to that. And I tell people when they say it's going to be years to get to this and you're kind of blowing this out of proportion. So one of the bills was about our utilities and the disconnect when it gets to a certain degrees in the state of Washington. And they want to go across the board when the weather comes into and says it's at this degrees, and we are debating about, is it 90, is it 95, is it 98? What does that mean? And how is that going to be impacted by utilities? So we can make sure we have grid reliability. We talk about these different things. So now they're going through this algorithms that will automatically do that, the smarter the homes we have. And we have already have smart metering. So it's not that big a leap to get to where you're discussing.
But how do we charge our electric cars?
Oh, that's easy. Small modular reactors.
But if we have rolling blackouts, how are we going to charge our cars?
Well, that's the point. We want everybody to turn off all their lights and everything else now. So,
you know, there are countries that are going to need to get
this
to work.
This is the state of Washington. You didn't get that message.
There are countries that are going to need to get to work producing more labor.
Yeah.
Well,
because I mean,
so who did President Biden have in his White House today? And they're going to dinner right now.
Yes, actually. Prime Minister of India.
India is our answer. India is going to be the leverage against China. At least that's what this plan is.
Well right. I
mean, for that labor that's cheap, and they can do this.
Wow.
Yeah, no.
At least that's where they're heading.
Well, they've already done it with the call centers.
Yes, and they've already started that piece. Now, the low cost on this, I mean.
Look, we already know that kids are digging lithium.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I don't mean thumbs up digging lithium.
No.
They're digging with shovels.
Right.
So child labor is getting the lithium for your electric vehicle.
Right.
That is destroying countries, but it's okay because you're not killing the environment at all. You're saving the environment. Sleep right. well at night.
As long as it's not here in the state of Washington, it's good that we can do that.
If we can't see it, it doesn't happen.
Right.
You know, it's interesting.
Just don't look at the satellite map of
Myanmar,
and that way look at the 200 pools of toxicity.
Right.
Do you think we're at a point, I'm sure you're aware of the book Future Shock by Alvin Toffler.
Yes. Yep.
Where it's basically the premise that man loses his ability to comprehend the technology he created. It becomes too much for it. Do you think we're there?
I think if we're not there, we're really close.
To the point where, like with AI, okay, I created Frankenstein, but now I can't comprehend or to control it.
Yeah, there's a Center for Safe AI, and it's a group that's coming together to make sure there's code and lines that we need to have an ethics framework that everybody's agreeing that we're not going to go past this line of, it's similar to what we're seeing in nuclear power when it came out in the 50s, 60s, that whole piece. And Oppenheimer's coming out next month, the movie.
Yeah, the movie.
And if you read anything about that and the history we have here, even locally, it's you're going to build this thing and you're going to push the button. We don't know if you're just going to end the world. This is getting close to when we're creating this. The genie's out of the bottle already. Mm-hmm. How far is this going to go and how fast? Nobody really knows.
Those people were brilliant so many years ago.
Yes.
You know, Asimov, like you mentioned, Rob, and some of those other people, and visionaries who knew. I mean, some of us that have been around a little bit longer, it's like, wow, how did we get here?
Yeah. You never thought it'd be this fast, and everybody says it's going to be further off, and here we are.
Yeah.
Autonomous vehicles, things going on this, and you're going to trust that to autonomous airplanes.
Oh, that's another great movie, Demolition Man, with Wesley Snipes and Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah.
Self-driving cars.
What were they doing? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sandra Bullock was in that, too, by the way.
Yeah. Dennis Leary was the leader of the underground movement, where they had the classic car down in the sewer.
That was great.
Yeah. What a great movie.
Well, now we know why you're staying up till 10 o'clock and you're watching all
these watching Wesley Snipes and Demolition
It's all good
Man.
Quality, you know, sharing of information. Educational.
Let's take our final time out real quick. We'll come back. We're going to talk Boeing with Senator Bankey and this new proposed airline structure. It's quite fascinating if you look at the pictures. We'll touch on that a bit as well. State Senator Matt Bankey from the 8th Legislative District joining us here. Bottom Line News Radio, 610 KONA. Back, Bottom Line News Radio, 610 KONA. Happy Thursday. Robin John, State Senator Matt Bankey from the 8th joining us here on the Bottom Line. So I think it's fair to say for the last number of years, Boeing's been a bit beleaguered.
Yes.
I think we know, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, but they certainly, going back to the days of Gary Locke as governor, they were given that preferential tax status, which years later created a real issue for them with the World Trade Council.
Right. About 4 years ago when I was in the House, we had to correct what that issue
yes,
was.
Yes, and so. Boeing asked you to correct that issue, but it seemed to me that was done so more money could be funneled to the union and contracts and salaries, and it really didn't help Boeing at all. It just helped the employees be able to claim more money because of the tax preferential status. So it screwed them on like multiple fronts. But you know, hey, it's kind of what it really came down to. So you have that. You have what's happened, the issues that arose with 737 MAX.
Yep.
You know, moving slowly but surely out of Washington State for the better part of a decade.
Yep.
Now, this past weekend in Paris, Boeing seemed to rekindle some of what made the company great. The innovation, the creativity, the pushing the aeronautic envelope. And looking at this, the design for this new, for lack of a better term, body style, it's glider-esque in the way the wings are positioned above the aircraft instead of out of the side of the aircraft, being held up by trusses. Talk to us a little bit about the concept about the claims that it will be more fuel efficient, and why now, and why are we, how is it we're just getting to this point now and we didn't get there 20, 30 years ago?
So appreciate you bringing this up, because it is a big issue we need to keep in the limelight of that. Boeing's big part of Washington State for years. I've had the opportunity moving over to the Senate to ask, when Senator Huntingford stepped down, to be working with Representative Dent, who I heard you had on last week or earlier, yeah, last week, talking about the Aviation Caucus. So I'm the Senate Republican member on there. My background, so I got a master's degree at Embry-Riddle in aeronautical science. So this, to me, brings back those days to your question of the spacecraft, aircraft design functionality of what you can leverage lift over thrust and get that opportunity to ensure you get maximum efficiencies on the wings. And without getting geek on that piece, was then you can maximize the amount of payload you're in there for reducing, whether it's hydrogen, electric, or whatever version we're going to put on the engines or the propulsion system to get the thrust to do that in there. So the lighter weight makes it better. You're maximizing the efficiencies on there. Stability is going to be even higher. And then they're showcasing, like you said, that notch, pushing, I think, the rest of the world coming out of COVID, because Paris Air Show is going on this week. They didn't have it last couple of years because of all the COVID stuff going on. This gets them back into the game, saying we have a lot of exciting things going on and we want to build that in the States.
You know, you were talking about the wing being held up by girders. If I remember, having built tons of balsa wood airplanes, you're basically taking a section of wing, the width of the fuselage, and you're putting it to use, because I was thinking, you know, like you have the C-5 Galaxy, the wings are in the upper part, yes, but they're still attached to the fuselage.
Right.
So let's say the body is 30 feet wide. If you're lifting the wing off the body, that's an extra 30 feet of wing, which is going to give it more lift, which means less horsepower.
Correct.
Ding, ding. I got my junior engineering badge.
There you go. So Boeing is saying this won't be rolled out for another decade, roughly.
Right. Which is the sad part. We're pushing them to make sure we get out sooner.
Yeah. I mean, there's obviously testing, you know, flights, yep, so on and so forth. Going in this direction, because now we're kind of used to certain airlines being a certain way to handle certain capacity. You know, the Dreamliner is like the double-decker bus of airlines. It's, you pack all the people and all the cargo. And
you got beds. You got, right. I mean, nowadays,
you got everything. Amazing.
Yeah.
Is this new design going to be a step back when it comes to passenger load and cargo load, because you're going with a more lightweight and you're trying to accomplish fuel efficiency and other things along those lines? Is it going to compromise in that, where it's going to be a smaller passenger cargo aircraft?
To your second point, I believe it's that niche that's going to go into a smaller market, so you can have those flights like Pasco to Olympia, if that comes to, or the next SeaTac-2 where that's coming out of, and do more of those smaller to medium runs, allowing that opportunity to have those 150, I think, or 120 total passengers on board, and still allow for luggage as well, and then fuel, of course, to get there. But it's also priming so we can leverage the hydrogen efforts that we're talking about in the state, and then look into the innovations with electric airplanes in the future. Which, by the way, we got a couple seats open if you guys are available.
Yeah.
Or well, we saw that airplane tested at Moses that? Lake yeah. recently, that yeah. airplane.
Speaking of which.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, we talk about weight. We know how much weight the batteries are in an electric vehicle.
Not much.
No, 2,000 pounds or so.
Something like that.
In the full-size Tesla.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, so when you know that that's going to be added to the weight of a car, and you can't go from here to Seattle.
Oh, no.
Right. How many batteries is it going to take to put on an EV plane?
Well, not as much as you think.
Okay.
So they've got it down. Again, a short-haul version of this would actually work.
Define short-haul.
And that's Pasco to Seattle.
Okay, so it's a 45-minute flight.
Keep bringing up about a 45-minute to an hour flight kind of thing. The problem then gets to when then you're taxiing, and then you're sitting there at the gate. Do you have enough time to recharge? Because even the Teslas now are, even on the fastest recharge, are taking 45 minutes, you know, less than an hour. They're getting better. But talking to PNNL and some of those advancements that they're doing in the batteries, it's getting better, but they're not there for 10, 15 years. Well, so that's slowing up a lot.
Can't they put an extra little like beanie propeller on there? Because you know you can run a battery on your truck. My battery was 4 years old, but it recharges via the alternator. And but apparently the lithium ion battery is not rechargeable.
No, and you have to use the other ones, which are a little bit heavier. To even, I think it was Bert Rutan that had the one that had solar panels on top of the wings, that it would actually then charge as you're in flight and would come into. But then you got to get the heavier other batteries that you can recharge.
Okay.
Why don't we just
If you're flying out of Heathrow, you're going to get all that lovely British sunlight to read.
You're going in the English Channel. Never mind.
No, I think the governor, didn't he say in the press release he flew over in one of these? Oh, no, wait, my bad. Paris?
He might have made it to the English Channel.
My bad. Yeah.
Not even close.
Wrong one. Maybe that was another flight.
Yeah. So. He was puddle jumping.
That's what it was.
Literally. Too bad they didn't. Too bad the Titan. Well, I was going to say, I wonder if the Titan people extended him Ocean Gate. Hey, Governor Inslee, want to come for a supper? Anyway, ba-dum-bum.
So it's a great design.
It is. It sounds like it is a great design and exciting. If Boeing could get this out earlier. So one of the things, I'm glad you brought up Representative Deng, because we did talk to him the other week about the process looking for an airport. We did bring something else up to him, too, one of our callers, actually. We'll bring this up to you as well. Brought up the idea of, instead of going over the pass, why not go under the pass?
Yes.
And use Bertha.
Yes.
Well, not Bertha, something that works.
Well, yeah.
Something that works. There are boring machines out there that work. You know, I mean, not like what happened in Boston for like people's entire lifetimes, or Bertha. I mean, the big dig to who, yeah. But
so to your point, Elon Musk did this, and he's done it to where Vegas has one, to where you can go into, I think it's McCarran the airport there in Vegas, come in there, you'll get a Tesla automatic autonomous vehicle and take you right to, and it's got a closed loop that comes to the main street and the hotels where you're staying at, and then it comes back around to the airport.
But if you think about it.
And he dug it all with his own equipment.
Wow.
If you think about this, imagine, one, the pressure you take off the passes in the wintertime.
100%.
Two, you're not talking about closing roadway conditions. You're not talking about people wouldn't have to chain up. People wouldn't have to put studs on their tires. If you can go under that stretch in the wintertime, and the passes could remain for people that want to use them to go skiing.
Right.
It would seem to make sense. I know it would be expensive.
Very expensive.
It would be very expensive. Right. Absolutely would. But there's even the possibility of making it a toll road.
Yeah. And I think people would go that far with it.
I'd be fine with that.
When you're talking about location of the second, when he brought up some of those issues. You don't want to build in people's backyards, but we need it. Where do you get the people to?
And that's it. I mean, we need to figure out where we're going to put the airport. We need, because we need it. We need to have the airport. So we got to figure out at some point in time where we're going to put it. I think we need that more than we need we do need a second Costco. But maybe we might need the airport.
I keep hearing Trader Joe's, too. I mean,
everybody
wants a Trader Joe's.
By the way, we're still getting a Fridays and a Chili's. They haven't shown up yet. They're still on the way. State Senator Matt Begge from the 8th. Great to have you.
Thank you.
Great to be here. Thank you, guys. And hopefully we get an In-N-Out burger. That's mine. So
we'll talk about that. I'll tell you what. In-N-Out, we'll lobby for In-N-Out burger and Chick-fil-A.
Okay, there you go.
We'll put a list together.
Yep.